and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community to listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week, Cheyenne Beattie, Network Manager of Native Voice One and radio host on KNBA 90.3 FM. Hosted by the Anchorage Museum as part of the Alaska Native Culture Smithsonian Spotlight Lecture Series, her talk on discovering our native voice is coming up next on Addressing Alaskans after the news. This is KSKA Anchorage, and you're listening to Addressing Alaskans with Cheyenne Beattie. Her talk on discovering our native voice was recorded at the Anchorage Museum on May 2nd.
Hello, and welcome to the Smithsonian Spotlight, a lecture series featuring Alaska Native artists and scholars, held the first Thursday of every month here at the Anchorage Museum. It is my honor to introduce tonight's speaker, Cheyenne Beattie. Cheyenne is Han Gwichin Athabascan and grew up living a traditional subsistence lifestyle in Eagle, Alaska. Living in this remote community, she found a connection to the rest of the world through radio. This, along with her love of singing, drew Cheyenne to a career in radio, which she has pursued to great success. From April 2006 to February 2013, Cheyenne served as the host and producer of Earth Songs, a nationally distributed weekly public radio program for Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, showcasing contemporary Native American and Indigenous music. Listeners in Alaska and the rest of the country have known Cheyenne as a local personality on Kwanic's Anchorage radio station KNBA. Her work for Kwanic included directing the Native Media Empowerment Project and co-producing the award-winning programs Native Word of the Day, Stories of Our People, and radio documentary Coming Home, The Return of Alutiiq Masks. Cheyenne is currently the network manager for Native Voice One, a national provider of Native programming that educates, advocates, and celebrates Native American life and culture. In addition to all of this, Cheyenne also contributes to her community by performing and emceeing at gatherings and events, and serves as the president of the Alaska Native American Indian Heritage Month Board. Please join me in welcoming Cheyenne Beattie.
Thank you, Dawn Bittison. I think she just took all my material. Just kidding. Well, hello, Nechita Honche, which means how are you doing in Han Gwichin Athabascan. My name is Cheyenne Beattie, and as Dawn Bittison said, I am Han Gwichin Athabascan from the lovely city of Eagle, Alaska. It's actually where the Yukon River meets the Alaska-Canadian border. There's 180 people that live there, and there's probably about 40 people that live actually in Eagle Village. As I said, I'm part of the Han Gwichin Athabascan, but I'm also part of the Trondak Gwichin, which is in the Yukon Territory of Canada. My mother and father are Reggie and Bill Goble. My grandparents are Silas Stevens and Marianne Junaby, and my great-grandfather and great-grandmother were Willie and Louise Junaby. And Louise was part of the Trondak Gwichin in Moosehide, which is near Dawson City, Yukon Territory. This is me when I was little villager-pillager in the Trapaline. My family, as I said, had lived a subsistence lifestyle. This is my mother, and Reggie, and I out on the Trapaline. And the Trapaline was one of those places that we would go every year. And my father, Bill, actually trapped marten. And you can see me with my mom outside of our little cabin that was on Gold Run in the 40-mile country. My family and I lived the subsistence lifestyle, as you can see, with these lovely caribou hanging in the background. And while we were out on the 40-mile trapping marten, I remember one of the times that I trapped one of the biggest marten. One of my things that I used to do when I was that little was I'd have to go out with my mom and make little rabbit snares with her so we could catch some of our food. And I got the biggest Martin that year. I still tell my dad he owes me $80. Here's another picture of us in the small trapline cabin on Gold Run. And if you can see on the table, there's a silver radio sitting there. And like many families, you know, we relied on the radio as a means of survival and communication. Radio to us, out on the trapline, we were out there all alone. We were dropped off in a little bush plane and we'd be out there for 2 months at a time. And so the radio to us was basically the survival as far as finding out what the weather was going to be like so we would know if we would be able to have mush the dogs out to actually trap our line. But also as a way of communication, which is a big thing back in those days when we didn't have telephone and mostly many villages had CBs during that time. And you would be able to call this radio station from maybe like the one and only phone in your village and tell messages to other communities, whether it be there was a birth, maybe somebody died, and also like us, happy messages out on the trap line, which were sometimes we were out there for Thanksgiving and my grandparents all the way from Ohio would call this radio station. And they would say, "Happy Thanksgiving to Cheyenne, Bill, and Reggie out on Gold Run in the 40-mile country from your grandma and grandpa in Berea, Ohio." And so that's kind of what piqued my interest into getting into radio. And in fact, one of the things that I used to do when I was little was I had my own little radio show with our wheel dog, which is the first dog. That's behind the dog sled. It's the one that really pulls the sled. And I had to fire him because he didn't contribute very much. But I used to sit in my house across the river. We are the only people that live on the other side of the Yukon River. And we didn't have we didn't have television. We didn't have running water or electricity. And so the one thing I did have was radio, and I would wait every day to listen to Casper the Friendly Ghost on radio. So that was my first form of media, and it really spoke to me, and it was a big part of my life. In 1999, I worked at the Alaska Native Heritage Center, which it was their first year that they opened, and I was working in the gift shop, and Quantic Broadcast Corporation came and they had a booth there, and they were looking for people to become fellows, and they're looking to cultivate young Alaska Native youth into becoming the next producers and marketing and Native radio. And I got the production assistant fellowship within Quantic Broadcast Corporation. And then eventually, I got onto the air. Whenever people say that, yeah, I was a janitor and somebody didn't come in one day and they asked me to be on the radio. That really does happen sometimes. And it was kind of one of those things that somebody was sick and they were like, "Can you hop on the radio today?" I'm like, "Sure, I would love to." And then eventually I ended up being on 90.3 KNBA and being an on-air personality in the afternoons. If any of you are more interested in finding out about that, you can always go to knba.org. And then I left after a little while and I went to the Art Institute of Seattle where I got my associate's degree in audio production. And when I came back, I started the national show Earth Songs, which was already formed and created in Quantic, but I took over as host of that. And it is a 1 hour show that is done weekly, and it's contemporary indigenous music infused with interviews with artists. And if you want to find out more about that, you can go to earthsongs.net. Currently, as Don said, I am the network manager of Native Voice One, which is our national distribution of Native programming. We We have 10 programs on Native Voice One, and you can find out more about our programs at nv1.org. One of the things I wanted to talk about at the beginnings of media and Alaska Native perspectives in media was a very instrumental person who was a Nupiaq from Point Hope, Howard Rock, and he started actually the Tundra Times in 1962. And, you know, there was a time during this time that the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act was happening, and it was really hard for different communities within the state of Alaska to kind of know what was happening in the outside world without having television, running water, electricity. And so Howard Rock basically began the Tundra Times to keep Alaska Natives informed on the different matters of interest that were happening within not only Alaska, but also in Washington, D.C. at that time. And these two reasons, which you can read yourself, basically, this is from the first editorial that came out in the Tundra Times from Howard Rock. And this, the first reason for the Tundra Times was to be the medium to air the views of the Native organizations and also reflect their policies and purposes as they work for the betterment of Native people of Alaska, and also to reflect their aims and as well as their hopes, and to strive in aiding them in struggles for just determination and settlement of enormous problems. The second reason, he said, was to strive to keep informed on matters of interest for all Natives of Alaska, and whether they be the Eskimos of the Arctic or the Athabascans of the interior or other Indians and Aleuts of the Aleutian Islands. And so a lot of these reasons also carried on into the formation of radio too. One of the people that I think is very instrumental in the making of me is in radio was Nellie Moore. She was one of the pioneers of Native radio, or the history of Native radio. She has been the general manager of KOTZ, as well as the co-owner of Independent Native News, and she is also an independent radio producer. And she's a Nupiaq, and her family is from Kotzebue. And Nellie talks about the importance that the Tundra Times played during the actual formation leading up to the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act.
Up until the Tundra Times came along, there was very limited printed news that came from anywhere. The only thing that we had really for communications from the outside, like Washington, D.C., was either a religious church station, which came from North Pole, and the two church-affiliated stations in Nome. So when the Tundra Times came along and ANCSA was happening, it became pretty much the vehicle for getting the news out. Although ANCSA was getting a lot of attention from, like, the Anchorage Daily News and, of course, the Times, even the Seattle Times, there was no real way of understanding how communications worked in the bush. So Howard Rock and some of the people that worked with him through that period understood, you know, the needs of rural Alaska. They understood what was happening with the negotiations over ANCSA, because they stayed in really close touch with not only the Native players, but they had pretty good access to Senator Stevens and some of the people that were in Washington, D.C. So they pretty much kept the bush informed on what was happening with ANCSA. There were a few other small papers and a lot of interest, of course, from the urban areas, but that pretty much was the main vehicle, aside from telephone, which was pretty limited even at that time.
So who was the first radio station to go on the air? And depending on who you talk to in the country, you could have a variety of answers, but KYUK was the very first Native radio station, or radio station that served a Native community. And it started in May 1971, and they're celebrating 42 years of broadcasting this year. And they had different programs that were within the were with the Yupik language, but also they aired different dialects of the Yupik language. Some of the other radio stations that came along shortly thereafter was April 24th in 1972, KTDB from Pine Hill, New Mexico. They actually had 3 hours a day for 5 days a week on their air when they first started. And they were known as the first Indian-owned radio station in the country, and they actually do daily simultaneous translations of NPR news headlines into Navajo. They're on the Raman Navajo Reservation. Then in December 22nd, 1975, KBRW in Barrow, Alaska came on the air, and they have their programming as information from local state news and public affairs. They also have culture programming that plays a vital role in the Inupiaq culture and language. And they add entertainment like the live call-in programs, which are very popular up there, like the birthday show or the call-in where you can give shout-outs to the people in the community, which is always nice if you've ever been to KBRW to listen to while you're there. Then in 1975, KEYA came in Bella Court, North Dakota, serving the Turtle Mountain Chippewa community, and its format was primarily country music with public affairs and headline news from NPR. Then we had, in June 1976, KSUT in Ignacio, Colorado, which serves the Southern Ute Indian Reservation with a mix of tribal news and personal messages for the reservation. And the many others came after that, but our very own KMBA 90.3 here in Anchorage, Alaska, came to the scene October 1996. And here, this is our president and CEO of Quantic Broadcast Corporation. Her name's Jacqueline Slee, and she's a Nipak Eskimo. Her family is originally from Kotzebue area, but she grew up here in Anchorage. And she talks about the importance that the Alaska Native perspective in the media serves. And so we'll hear from her.
It's important to have Alaska Native perspectives in the media. Having 25 or so public radio stations that were contributing news to Alaska Public Radio Network, and there were really no Native people producing or anything for the statewide broadcast. And there would be gatherings of the Alaska Public Radio Network managers and no Native representation. So under the leadership of Alaska Public Radio Network, Diane Kaplan, Roy Hundorf, who was on the board of APRN, I think really felt it was important to have a Native perspective because there's a huge population of Alaska Natives in this state with very little representation at that time. So it started way back then and 10 years earlier to really get more Alaska Natives involved in radio so that we could nurture the storytelling of our people, to continue the oral tradition, to try to maintain and preserve Alaska Native languages, and to build cross-cultural understandings. And so many misrepresentations of Alaska Natives as the drunk Native on the streets, things that really needed to have a positive perspective of all the great work that Alaska Natives are doing. The need was there, and it still continues today.
And a lot of the programs that we do on Quantic, we have on 90.3 KNBA, the AAA Adult Album Alternative, but we also have a lot of cultural programming, and one of our most well-known number one national programs is National Native News, which was started in January 1987. In Alaska with host Gary Fife, who is Creek and Cherokee from Tulsa, Oklahoma. You can hear National Native News as a 5-minute newscast, but originally started off as a 15-minute newscast. And then you can hear it individually as it's aired, but it's also aired in our second most well-known national show, which is Native America Calling, which was formed in July 1994. And Native American Calling was actually loosely based on NPR's Talk of the Nation. And now I want to kind of show you a video that we actually have from our current host, Antonia Gonzalez of National Native News, as well as Tara Gatewood from Native America Calling.
I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and I'm the host and producer of Native America Calling. And each weekday, we bring you different conversations. We connect to stations across Turtle Island and beyond about topics that are connected to Native communities.
So I'm Antonia Gonzalez, the anchor and producer of National Native News. And National Native News is a five-minute program that covers indigenous issues about people across the United States and around the world. More than 25 years ago, National Native News was created to help bring indigenous voices to the air, and that's what we do on National Native News. It's a stringer-based program, so we work with more than 50 stringers across the United States and Canada. We've also had reports filed from Australia and Latin America. Anywhere there's indigenous people, we will cover the issues, whether it's social, economic, cultural, even pop culture. So I always like to say that give me a story, I will find the indigenous issue.
And we learn about who we are as Native people today. We also hear about the cultures and histories that we all connect to. And we open up our electronic talking circle to hear the voices of many different Native nations about how they connect to media today, as well as keep their cultures and languages strong. And so it's a unique opportunity to learn more about who we are as Native peoples, and it bridges many different voices and tribal nations together. I think it's a very huge accomplishment that we're able to bring so many voices together.
I think National Native News is important because we need to have, well, for one, it's produced from an indigenous perspective, and it was created so that we could have accurate and fair reporting about indigenous people. And that's something that we often see that is not in mainstream media, especially when it comes to these big stories. For example, a few years ago with the huge lobbying scandal, Jack Abramoff, that was everywhere across the country and around the globe, and people were talking about this disgraced lobbyist, but they were missing the point that the money that he was getting was from the tribes, and nobody was really reporting on that.
Native America Calling provides a live place where people can connect and share their thoughts. It encourages Native people to share their take on life. It also gives people an opportunity to learn about who we are as Native people. And because it is a audio source, you can tune in some places that you couldn't with video. And so a lot of our tribal communities really hold on to that ability to broadcast this in their own community. And so it's really unique because it is live every day, and the audience, you never know who's tuned in. And so whoever's present each day is a reflection of the topic or the different guests and what they're saying and engaging. And so it gives this unique opportunity to understand what Native people are thinking. And so it's the only kind in existence, and it's been around 17 years. But, you know, even in the times of threats to the end of radio, we keep it strong because we're able to have conversations. And so people who are in the audience, it's a very inviting format for people to share their thoughts.
And it's important that we highlight our history, whether it's good or bad. What would our history be like if our microphones were there back in the past? So we look at a variety of issues. It could be a person, it could be a place, it could be an event, and it could be good, bad, whatever, so that We are carrying on the legacy of Indian country by sharing our history and also celebrating our history as well.
So we covered a program about drunk driving, and this issue in some communities doesn't get put on the table. And sometimes some of these common occurrences in our communities get looked over. And so we opened up our talking circle to ask the questions of what drunk driving, the impacts that it had on tribal communities. And we invited parents who lost their children to this. And so throughout the hour, people were able to express the impact of what happens when this occurs in their communities, when Native people are either the victims of these accidents or are the people who are behind the wheel.
And seeing a community be in Turtle Mountain suppressed by the loss of so many.
You know, I've learned my lesson. You know, people out there, if you're drinking, stop. You have loved ones that love you. You know, I go out, you know, I'm nervous right now, but...
You're doing well, Carol.
It is so guilt, such a guilt trip that you go on, you know, every day. I thank God. A few years back, I met them.
We didn't shy away from this topic, although some people would shy away because it is one of the stereotypes that Native Americans are drunk people. And so we went right in and made this a topic because we needed to explore. And there were several people who called throughout the hour who owned it. And we even had a person who called in and knew it was wrong. But on air, shared their story of how it impacted lives. And as the hour moved, got a really broad spectrum of how drunk driving affects Native people. And so because it is a live hour, you invite the listening audience to be able to also participate. And so sometimes people who may not feel comfortable talking about this in front of tons of people or maybe even in their own family, they use our talking circle as a place to say things that maybe they don't tell anyone else or they've never shared with another person. And so it makes the hour extremely real. And that's why the work that we put into it has to be very concentrated and focused because we are dealing with people's lives.
It's very important that we help and continue to grow future Native American broadcasters. There's a lot of Native people who are in the media, a lot of print people, and there's also a lot of younger generations who are interested in doing media in a new way. And so I think it's important that we help our younger generations get into this and find mentors and learn more about broadcasting and especially radio, because radio is very important in tribal communities. You can go to a tribal community, for example, in the Southwest, and the radio station will be on at the gas station. You'll go to the clinic, the radio station will be on the clinic. And, of course, radio station will be on in cars and homes. So I think it's really important that we keep up and get future generations involved in Native radio.
What we do is something that contributes to the entire nation's history as well. And so we invite you to join us as well. Call-in number is 1-800-99-NATIVE, and we invite you to explore our electronic talking circle and tune in and hear what people think about us and what Indian country has to say.
That was Antonia Gonzalez and Tara Gatewood, who are with the National Native News and Native America Calling. And now I want to talk about... locally, language is a big part of my life to me. I'm really trying to learn my language right now.
This is KSKA Anchorage, and you're listening to Addressing Alaskans with Cheyenne Beattie, network manager of Native Voice One and radio host on KNBA FM 90.3. Her talk on discovering our Native voice was recorded at the Anchorage Museum on May 2nd.
KNBA wanted to make sure that we had language preservation as well as cultural programming that was going to be on the air. And we wanted to do that in various different ways. And one of the things that was very important to the preservation of language that happened in 2009, KNBA and CITC sponsored the 26-part series program called Denana Lifeways. And it was a series that highlighted the history and culture of the Denana people who inhabit the traditional homeland that Anchorage and KNBA are a part of. And you can see this Denina woman, Andrea Ivanoff, who is originally from Lyme Village, and my Shikun, which is Denina for husband, Aaron Leggett. He worked on this project with us at KNBA, and Denina Lifeways brought us together. So thanks, Denina Lifeways, because I married that guy. And this particular piece that I'm going to play is actually at the very beginning. You're going to hear Andrea Ivanoff speak in Denina, and then you're going to hear Aaron explain what she's saying in English.
Vanenuk Taliahi. Nichich, Dalgudrashtun, Oyachti Yasvit, Oyachti Nudazachalch, Chu Kerasar, Oyachti Kizachach.
Here's a translation. One May, I cut off some birch bark from a tree. I rolled the bark up. Next, I moistened it and scraped the inside to make it smooth and folded it into a basket. I sewed a piece of willow around the top with sinew to hold the folds in place.
And if you don't know, this fall in September, the Anchorage Museum is actually going to be having an exhibit on Denina Athabascans that Aaron has been working on for 7 years. So I invite you to come this fall in September and find out more about Denina Athabascans. The other project that I did that was really special to me and I was really happy to do was one on Athabascan fiddling. You can see me and my little cousin in our little Easter bonnets with my great-grandfather, Willie Junabe, who is a very famous Athabascan fiddler. And I did a special on Athabascan fiddling during the 50th year anniversary of the statehood of Alaska. And here's a little short piece. You'll actually hear my grandfather in this piece, Craig Mishler, who wrote the Crooked Stovepipe, a book on Athabascan fiddling, is also speaking in this as well. And he actually went to Eagle, Alaska 2 days before Christmas, 2 years before I was born, and recorded him. And you're going to hear my grandfather talking to him, and he's going to be playing the Red River Jig.
I don't play too loud in that, huh?
No.
It's on?
Uh-huh.
Well, don't get my voice in there.
This song that you're hearing right now is a very, very popular song that you'll always hear during the Athabascan Fiddle Festival that happens every November in Fairbanks, Alaska. And you just have to get your moose hide moccasins on, the best beaded kind, and get down and do the jig. And they have jig contests during the Athabascan Fiddle Festival. So if you ever have the chance, go to Fairbanks and check out the Athabascan Fiddle Festival that happens every November. Well, one of the last things I wanted to talk about is how life has changed for us in radio. And it's not just the airwaves that we're putting programming on anymore. Due to social media, we are finding new ways to preserve, document and perpetuate our cultures, our languages, and our traditions. And one of the things that we did during Coming Home, Return of the Lutic Mass is we put on over 200 stations and promoted on social media. And I'm going to play a little clip from that. This is Helen Simeonov, the late Helen Simeonov. And the Return of the Lutic Mass was hosted by me, but produced by Demay Roberts.
In 1872, a young French explorer sailed home from Alaska with a trunk full of Lutic artifacts. He spent 6 months collecting artwork, songs, and stories. He never thought he would be saving the history of an entire culture.
50 years ago, if you sat down and told people, you know, there's going to come a time when you really need to remember this story for your grandkids, the person would have laughed you right off the dock.
The masks themselves change people's attitudes because they tell stories.
The artifacts remained hidden inside a 13th century castle in northern France until Lutic people started searching for their culture.
I was looking at the masks, and then all of a sudden I started crying, and I thought, what am I crying about? I think thanks.
A Lutic culture comes home.
That was a special that we did that was wonderful to actually create this documentary that we did. And we actually got to go to Kodiak, Alaska, and meet Sven Håkansson, which you could hear in there, as well as Perry Eaton and Helen Simeonov. Now, one of the ways that we are doing new and innovative things, keeping our stories alive, is digital storytelling. And this is Peggy Berryhill. She's, I considered, a great pioneer in the history of Native radio. And she's a member of the Muscogee Nation of Oklahoma. She's part of the Bird Clan. And she's a general manager and also owns KGUA in Mendocino County, California. And Peggy Berryhill is talking about how, you know, things have definitely changed and how we can capture our stories in new ways with all these new things such as iPads, iPods, and computers, blogs, Facebook, social media. And she's talking about how we can do that with digital storytelling.
Everybody has a story to tell, and you can stimulate people into telling a small piece of that story that could be 3 minutes long, as well as being a feature-length film. And we use computers, and in digital storytelling, maybe we'll add some family photos, and maybe we'll add some music, and it could be traditional or contemporary. And before you know it, you have this neat little story that's so deep and so authentic that no one else could share that story in that way. And I think digital storytelling, it comes in many forms around the country. And there is certainly the Center for Digital Storytelling right here in Berkeley. You know, the introduction of computers, and in particularly Macs, made it so simple in the early days. And now it doesn't matter what platform, whether you're Mac or Windows or Linux, whatever you choose to use, with cell cameras, with iPods, with iPads, with tablets. There's so many ways that we can document information, and it is important to document it, so not make it up. Let me be clear here. I'm not saying that the oral tradition isn't valid. It's absolutely valid. We're very good at it. But I mean, you want to be able to show something that happened. And maybe your auntie or uncle or grandma, who's the last speaker, you can see their smiling face talking to maybe one of their grandchildren and maybe telling a story. And you can turn that into a beautiful digital story and maybe tell the story of grandma or grandpa through photos. And through that, you could even tell your tribal history. And you can do a lot of that in just a few minutes. It's so absolutely important for us to do that on our own terms.
And I definitely agree with Peggy that we have all these new and innovative ways that we can share our culture, our language, and our traditions. Anybody can do it. If you own an iPad, if you own an iPhone, I mean, it's just so easy to capture information these days. And I just want to thank you all for coming, or as we say, Masi Cho, which is thank you very much, in Hongo Chinathabaskan. But I also want to leave you with the closing words of Ted Myack, who's Inupiaq from King Island.
My name is Ted Myack, Sr., At King Island, we had a special honor for the polar bear. When the polar bear was harvested, it was mandatory for our people to put on the polar bear dance, Anaksak, which is releasing the spirit. Because of King Island protocol, we cannot sing our polar bear songs unless there is a polar bear harvested. This puts us in a bind because these are our oldest songs. If we do not find a way to gain permission from our elders to sing these songs, we will lose them. And my peer group, we are the last ones who know these songs. I really think the Koanic is a good media. Radio is by far the fastest media to express our concerns, our hopes, our dreams, our stories, and our way of life. Koanic airs these for us. Koanic has given us the ways to learn about each other here in Alaska and about our Native American friends throughout our country and Canada. I think the young people will not know if we do not teach them these customs. It will be a sad day when the young people will not have a basis for saying who they are. History continues, and without the knowledge of the old ways among our people, the young people will be incomplete. Our way of life as we remember it is not being practiced very much anymore. It has dire consequences if we do not make some effort to bridge the gap between the elders and the young people nowadays who are caught up in the modern life. And we need to give them some sense of pride, a sense of identity of who they are, and the willingness to continue their traditions. Koanic is very appropriate to us because it gives us a chance to document these customs to where our young people will have access to them when we are no longer here. Up in Alaska, it is such a vast territory. Some of the customs are very ethnic, but the ethnicity stands where it should among a people, but to listen and hear the same ideas being brought out by the other groups is very encouraging. The life that our people taught us from long time back is similar. It's very good to see so many people expressing this, and I have no doubt that many of us still long for this kind of a setting to where we can sit back and say, this is who we are.
This is KSKA Anchorage, and you've been listening to Addressing Alaskans with Cheyenne Beatty, Network Manager of Native Voice 1 and radio host on KNBA FM 90.3. She spoke on discovering our Native voice as part of the Alaska Native Culture Smithsonian Spotlight Lecture Series, hosted by the Anchorage Museum on May 2, 2013. You can download today's program or subscribe to free podcasts of Addressing Alaskans at alaskapublic.org. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Addressing Alaskans' theme song, Trampolines, is by Patrick Lee. This has been a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Spack. And this concludes Season 5 of Addressing Alaskans on KSKA Anchorage. The program will return in September, Tuesdays at 2 p.m., repeating at its new time, 9 p.m. on Tuesday night. You won't hear Addressing Alaskans on air in July and August, but we'll still be out and about, gathering content and recording local lectures for Season 6. So please, if you're organizing a community event or know of something coming up that would be a good fit for the show, drop us a line anytime at alaskapublic.org.